Well, it's January, and it's the first time at City Hall in 2019 with Mayor John Hamilton. Thanks for having us.
Welcome to City Hall in 2019, yeah. Joe. Good to see you.
Yeah. I just thought, because we didn't get to this the last time, but you've officially announced that you're running for office again this year. So I guess one term isn't enough. You're ready if you want more.
Huh? Well, look, I feel very privileged to be in this job. It's a wonderful community, and I feel we've made a lot of progress in 3 years. And I, like many mayors, if you talk to them, they feel they will tell you, I think, that a lot of the work you do takes a long time. You're building the city momentum for decades to come. So I love what we're doing. I think we've made a lot of progress, and we'll be having a lot of discussions about that in the campaign season ahead.
Exactly. So we had our first round of winter weather. How did the city snowplows work? Did everything go off as planned?
You know, I happened to be out at Streets Department the Friday before the big snow, and they were loading all the trucks up early with salt and plows, and I think they did a terrific job. You know, those folks move around our city all through the night, salting and plowing, and I didn't hear any major issues. And you're right, we've had a pretty mild winter till now, but they handled that well.
And the new forecast says another round of winter storm scenario Friday night until Saturday night. So we may have a repeat performance this weekend.
So the school kids are bummed. Yeah. It's all happening on the weekend. Like, can't we get a day off? How does this work? But the salt domes are full. But, I see. Yeah. We have a lot of salt still because it's been not technically salt, but what we use on the
roads.
Right.
And people should clear their sidewalks. And
we do ask to be sure, you know, within as soon as you can and within 24 hours to clear your sidewalks so people can walk safely and others who have mobility issues can use the sidewalks.
So we had a recent announcement about Catalent announcing a $100 million expansion, 200 new jobs by 2024. To go along with that, the state is offering some tax credits. It's performance-based. Is the city joining with the state and offering some incentives as well?
We are looking at abatement, Joe. That'll go through City Council. We're talking to Catalent and talking to our colleagues there about that. I mean, you know, in the new economy, the word a unicorn is a company that is a new company that then sells for $1 billion. And for a community to have a unicorn is a big deal. Catalent is really our first unicorn because Cook Pharmica, which was a spinoff of Cook, was a new company. And within less than 15 years, they were sold for $1 billion to an external company. That's a big deal. And then Catalent's announcing that they're going to invest another $100 million or more to expand employment by a couple hundred people. We're really excited to see that kind of momentum. And they're very good jobs. They're good paying jobs and reigniting that part of our community.
Yeah. What kind of impact does something like this have on a community like Bloomington?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In one way, 200 jobs is 200 jobs churn up and down many times in a community. But to have a major new entrant to the community, expanding from Baxter and Cook in our community to add a third major life science company is a big deal in terms of the climate and the ecosystem. And then for them to come to town, buy the company and say, you know, within a year, We're gonna double down. We're doing more here. It's a very positive sign that this is a community people can thrive in, which is what we want.
You're meeting with Convergence, I believe, on Thursday. Is that the next scheduled meeting for the convention center expansion? What's the what you hope to accomplish during this? Because this is really kind of the first meeting after you've chosen them, correct?
It is. So, you know, we went through a whole big process of winnowing down and finding the right architect, and through a lot of stages and recommendations, we've settled on Convergence, based out of Kansas City. Deep experience in market sizes like us and specializing in conference centers, community centers. So this is the first meeting that them coming to town knowing they have the job, and basically we're going to have a little meet and greet and kind of get to know them. And then there's going to be some very intense sit-down meetings with the city and Convergence to talk about, all right, so how's this going to work in terms of contracting, in terms of pacing, in terms of pricing, in terms of what are the stages. There'll be a huge amount of public input, so we'll be talking about how do we schedule those kinds of things. Convergence will be back to town a bunch of times. This is the start, but it's a wonderful next step in the convention center project, which we're very excited about.
So when does the point get that the public and the meetings about what the convention center will look like and so forth?
Well, right. So this week we'll be talking with Convergence about the pacing of that, but I expect in the short months ahead we will begin that both internal and external engagement to say, okay, well, what do we really want there? How big is it going to be? What are the components going to be? And the public will be deeply involved in that. There is a steering committee that's created formally to oversee the project, representing the community, county, city, other folks, but then there'll be tons of just community engagement too. So if you have an idea of what the convention center ought to be ready and come to these meetings and let us know.
The Monroe County commissioners seem to be upset that they're not part of this meeting, or there's some lack of transparency again that they brought up through a letter that they sent you. What's going on there?
I was a little disappointed in that letter. They are definitely part of the project, and they're part of the process, and they're part of this day, in fact. The memorandum of understanding, which we've signed with the county, sets out the next steps. We've worked very closely with the county staff and with the steering committee, and there'll be places for all of us to participate. As the contracting entity, the city needs to have some discussions with this potential partner to make sure we look at how we're going to contract, how we're going to decide the pricing, and those kind of scheduling and staging matters. And those are things that need to be done in negotiation sessions, which we'll look forward to. But there'll be tons of input on this, and there's tons of engagement. We're waiting from the county the next level memorandum of understanding. We're waiting to hear from them that draft. And in the meantime, we're following the current draft of the MOU, which is what sets this out.
So 4th Street Garage is closed officially. We've heard from some parking business employees that they're having trouble finding spots, and they're being redirected to the convention center and the other city garage. From what you've heard, are things working out okay on that end?
Well, there's kind of two big different groups of users of that 4th Street garage, which is closed. There's inspections going on every day now to try to identify what it will take to repair it, what it'll cost, and how long it'll take, and we'll know that soon. They're the contract parkers, the people who monthly contract have a space. And my understanding is that they are pretty well settled either in the convention center lot, which I don't think is full as we're using it, or the other two garages. Maybe the more difficult group are the daily users, the public users who don't use it every day. They don't have a reserve spot somewhere else. Finding space on the street, finding space in other lots. There's plenty of information on the website, and if you want to call our office to ask about it. But it will mean a little more searching than just going right to the 4th Street garage that you're used to doing, at least for a few months as we repair it.
And there's kind of a lot going on at once with this, because 4th Street's being reevaluated for being repaired. And then there's also plans moving forward on the new parking garage in the Trades District. So things are happening.
Yes. I never knew how much time I'd spend talking about parking, but you know, it's a factor in the economy in the downtown. So with the Trades District growth, with the opening of the mill, with other entities that are looking at that to develop, we know we need a garage there. And that design and construction will begin over the next few months. Again, that too will involve plenty of input for the public to come in and say what they think it ought to look like. We're still even identifying the site for that garage. We don't know where that will be among two or three different locations.
At the same time, the city wants to look into more of long-term planning of transportation needs, and there's some assessment, some effort to assess that. Can you explain a little bit about what that's all about?
Sure. You know, one of the things we talk about is mobility management and how to help people get around, whether it's on a scooter or a bike or a car or a bus or a wheelchair, or how do you get around the city. And transportation demand management is a big thing. It's figuring out how do we manage the demand for mobility. In particular, how do we try to reduce the need for single passenger car trips? Because those are the least efficient that we have in many ways. And so we, at the same time we're doing these garages, we are doing a major transportation demand management study where we will be looking, kind of lifting up the cover of the whole city and saying, how do people get around? How can we help people get around in ways that create less congestion, less need for single passenger car rides, more use of transit, more use of trails, more use of carpooling, and so that's something overdue in the city. We haven't done it ever, as far as I know, and so we're going to be doing that in probably about a year. We'll get an interim report before mid-year this year about our options.
Does this come kind of on the same side as the needs of a new parking garage, or the replacement of the 4th Street parking garage, per fixing it up and how big that should be down the road? Because at some point, that's going to have to be replaced. So does this study kind of help for something like the 4th Street garage?
It does. It helps think about the garages. It helps think about street parking. It helps think about, you know, we've got a convention center. We've got the reuse of the current hospital site that's going to really change what we do. We've got Switchyard, which is changing. The Trades District, you know, downtown is a very vibrant downtown. We have about 8,000 parking spots downtown, private and public. And how many do we need in 20 years? And how will the change of automobile traffic, if we have self-driving vehicles, how could new kinds of buses and new kinds of shuttle systems work? All these things can help us get around better, and this analysis will look at that. So it'll affect garages, but it'll also affect parking, it'll affect transit systems and many things like that.
I want to ask you about the water metering. It might sound boring, but it's something we all use, and there's some new technology. It costs about $9 million to the city, but it's there to help the customer in the city.
Well, the first point is we have about 25,000 plus water meters. So everybody who uses water, drinking water supplied to you, you have a meter to measure how much you use. A lot of those are getting old. They're old systems and they need replacement. And what we've decided to do, utility department, is to replace them all and to turn them all into automated meters. So you don't have to have a person come and lift up your meter every month and measure how much you used. These instead will be 25,000 very low power automated readers that can get a reading every hour, even more frequently, but typically every hour, to check your usage. It will help us bill more accurately. Most importantly, probably, it will help us monitor the system. And if you have a user whose use changes all of a sudden, you start seeing a bunch of water use at night, you may have a leaky toilet, or you may have a hose you left on in the backyard. We'll now have a system that's smart enough to say, hey, Joe, you seem to be using a lot more water than you usually do. You might want to check, see what's going on. So rather than wait to the end of the month and get a terrible, you know, water bill because your toilet's leaking, you'll find out earlier.
What's the time frame for something like that?
So the whole system, 25,000, should be in within about 16 months, a little over a year. So in 2020, and as we roll it out through the next year plus, as your meter is put in, you will get the app, you will get the web access. So you can see, you can even monitor, you know, when your kids are home from college, how much more water you're using, you know, those few days, if you care to know that kind of stuff.
Interesting. I wanted to just get an update in general about high-speed broadband. I had someone come up to me and say, hey, next time you see the mayor, can you ask him about broadband? And I said, yeah, we haven't talked about that in a while. So it's kind of just more of an update, a follow-up. I don't have a specific thing to ask about, but we know about Axia and that fell through about, what, a year or so ago?
Yeah, a little over a year ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just curious about what's next.
So I continue to believe, we've been talking about infrastructure, right? We've been talking about water, we've been talking about transportation infrastructure and such. Digital infrastructure is hugely important for Bloomington. And we continue, not just Bloomington, actually, the United States is kind of behind the curve on digital infrastructure. It's a big issue for us to keep working on. We have private providers, AT&T, Comcast, and Smithville are the main ones that are providing access. I continue to believe that we need to work to improve that access. The national election didn't help things. The national election in 2016 kind of changed the tone at the federal level about interest in supporting innovation and challenge to some of the incumbents. So we're definitely still working on this. We're actively discussing options with others, but we're not where we want to be yet. And like many communities, you know, we continue to have digital divide issues, people who can't get good access to the internet, not only in the city, of course, it's true in the rural areas too. And I continue to believe this is really like the 21st century equivalent of electricity. We have to figure out how to get better access to everybody, and I'm going to keep working on it.
I have an email from Anne. She states, with the objective of streamlining the process to make building easier in Bloomington, the draft UDO proposes changing the power to grant variances and waivers of zoning regulations from citizen-appointed boards to an in-house decision-making process. And she says that reduces public input. So how does that fly to the mayor's oft-touted goal of making government more transparent?
Sure. Well, it actually doesn't change what we have. Right now, there are certain projects that just go to staff. if they're of a certain size or a certain type. So already we split projects into two kinds, those that go through staff and then those that go through the plan commission and the bigger public input. The UDO doesn't change that. The UDO actually tries to split it into three pieces. It does continue to say some of these projects can go to staff like they do today. It creates a new middle ground that is trying to say, if you build what we want, if you build what the community says we want, size of building, density, community benefit, whether it's affordable housing or green or other amenities, if you do just what we want, this UDO suggests we want to give you a streamlined process, not just by staff, but a streamlined process. And then if you don't build what we want, if you will, under the requirements, you'll have a more intense scrutiny if you're going higher than the community says you should, if you're going more dense than the community says you should, and the community benefits that you're offering aren't sufficient. So it's really not changing the overall structure. It is adding a category where we're going to be able to try to steer more development toward what we want as a community. And that's a really good public debate to have, very transparent to see what we do want. Mm-hmm.
When you said there were two categories for a development to go through, how does that get decided if it goes, you know, A, B, or C?
Yeah, that's right. First of all, it'll go through the Plan Commission and the City Council to set those categories up. It'll be baked into the Unified Development Ordinance. The zoning will set that out. And it will say things like, if you're a certain size in a certain location and a certain density and you have certain community benefits, then you fit in box B. If you don't, you go to A or you go to C or other things like that.
Okay. And hope that helps. Before we go, I heard about unveiling a healthy food initiative on Facebook today, Wednesday. Can you give us a little preview about what we're going to see this afternoon?
Sure. We're going to have a Facebook Live event to talk about the year of food, if you will. We have a new sustainability report, the first ever for the city, that really looks at a lot of issues from energy to equity to housing to food and the environment. And we're going to be talking about this year two ways, really. How do we strengthen the local food economy? We got a lot of farms, we got a lot of people growing things. How do we make that sector stronger, more vibrant, more people succeeding at it? Second, how do we try to move more of that local food, healthy food, into our whole community? People who may not access it as much now, either for location, convenience, price, other things. So it's thinking about how do we support local food and all of us use local food more. It'll be big institutions like IU or the school system, it'd be the city, and then the whole farmer and customer groups too. It's exciting, and we all eat. We all care about that. And more of us know if we can get food that's grown locally, that's healthy for us, and it's really healthy for our community as well.
Yeah, and this comes from a city that at one point, I don't know if it still does, had the largest farmers market in the state. So it's an important issue here.
We love our market, and it is the best farmers market in the state and the biggest. And you know, people, you can use food stamps at this. We double your food stamps at the farmers market to try to encourage that. But we still have places in the city where it's not convenient to get healthy food. So this will be announced as we talk about the options for that for this year of food coming up.
That was all I had. Was there anything that you'd like to announce or say, or any
no,
new?
No, you know, there's always so much going on in the city. We welcome everybody. The winter's been calm, but I'm sure we'll have some tough weather ahead. So be careful, walk carefully, be careful with each other.
And I have to mention, if you've driven by the new hospital site over on the bypass, boy, oh boy,
cranes
and truck after truck. It's an army of workers there. It is really impressive to see how
it's the biggest moving. Biggest economic development project, the biggest single project we've ever had in this community, and it's going to be coming out of the ground and really, you know, preserve and grow a lot of our jobs and healthcare economy, but also it's going to change the east side as employment center moves there and connections up to Griffey, which we can talk about another time. Maybe it's going to be some exciting changes on the east side too.